Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. I'm John Kuzma from EndZoneBlog.com's Across the Middle show, where we discuss everything that's happening around the NFL. Thank you guys for tuning in. We're going to cover a couple topics today. Hopefully, you guys enjoy them. And if you like them, make sure to tweet to us on Twitter at EndZoneBlogNFL. You can also talk to us on Instagram. It's just EndZoneBlog. Or just check out EndZoneBlog.com, and we got a special offer there. You can see on all our blog posts from Hulu. So if you want Hulu, go sign up, and you'll get a sweet deal there. Thank you to everyone at Hulu for hooking us up. But let's talk about some football. Actually, going to start with Jarvis Landry. You know, Jarvis Landry is still getting used to his role in Cleveland, but he led the Browns in receiving yards, and that's a good sign of what's to come. Most football fans are familiar with Jarvis Landry's body of work, and he's averaged over 1,000 yards per season in his 5 years in the NFL. However, 2018 was a challenge for Landry because he had to transition to being in Cleveland after spending his first 4 years in Miami with the Dolphins. Joining a new team is, you know, always presents a challenge because you had to adjust to a new system and get used to playing with different people around you. Keep in mind that the Browns initially started Tyrod Taylor and then switched to Baker Mayfield, so the receivers had to also deal with that change, and there was a lot on Jarvis Landry's plate in particular. Despite all those difficulties, Landry recorded a team high of 976 receiving yards. Some of those catches were flat out amazing, too. Landry can haul in the football with one hand or with a defender hanging on his back. It takes serious skill to make those plays, and Landry was constantly igniting a fire in his teammates. The other thing that has to be mentioned is Cleveland also asked him to run and throw the football at one point or another. Therefore, Landry was doing a little bit of everything for his new squad, and things should be even better in his second time around. You know, Baker Mayfield likes to distribute the ball to all of his weapons opposed to just keying in on his top guy. Next year, though, we might see Mayfield look Landry's way even more. You know, in order for the Browns offense to be at their best, they have to get about 10 touchdowns out of number 80. He only had 4 touchdowns last year, so you'd like to see Landry improve down near the end zone. But as far as being a team leader goes, no one is better. Jarvis Landry sets the tone, and the rest of the guys in that locker room follow. We know that will be crucial for Cleveland with a new head coach, you know, Freddie Kitchens taking over. So Jarvis Landry, we saw on Hard Knocks what he brings to that team. He's a vocal leader, and he doesn't like any BS. He's a hard worker. Like, he believes that you need to practice every single day, and you need to put in the work because you're not going to get better, you know, taking days off and acting like you're hurt and things like that. So Jarvis Landry isn't a guy who is about the look and, you know, and lacks substance. Instead, he's the exact opposite. He's committed to his craft. He hones his skills. He dedicates just as much time as he possibly can to being a professional athlete. And those are the guys that resonate with their teammates who lead from the front and get those other guys to buy into what they're selling. And I think Jarvis Landry is part of the reason that the Browns start to turn the page on those past struggles they had with Hugh Jackson, the winless season and the one-win season and things like that. I think Jarvis Landry comes in, he holds those guys accountable, and he shows firsthand that if you are willing to put in the work, that you will start to improve, and you will be rewarded for those improvements you've made. So I just love what Jarvis Landry brings to this team. His routes are sick. On one route, I watched him, the ball was snapped. He hesitated, just like took one step and hesitated and act like he wasn't going to run a route. Then he broke off into a fade perfectly. Baker throws up this fade to him in the left corner of the end zone, and he just had enough real estate in the end zone to haul in this touchdown pass. Had he took off right away, the defense, the cornerback, I should say, he would have been all over him and been able to just what we call as a defensive back, you kind of turn in, you turn inside to him, and you put your hand like down near the receiver's hip area or thigh area, And what you do is you kind of body him and go up to make a play. But since Jarvis Landry sold that he wasn't doing anything and made that cornerback think it was a run and Landry was just taking the play off, because sometimes receivers do that when the ball isn't coming their way or it's a run, they just don't block at all. Well, Landry fooled them into thinking that, you know, kind of lulled the corner to sleep. And then as soon as that corner blinked, Jarvis Landry caught him sleeping in the back of the end zone. It was just so perfectly executed. And you could tell that Baker Mayfield and Landry had worked on that so many times down near the end zone. It worked. Now, he only had 4 touchdowns, so he has to improve in the red zone. He has to get better down by the goal line. That was one play that he actually, what I was just talking about, actually did good in the red zone. But he needs to get a little bit better in that regard. But from a locker room standpoint, you couldn't have a better leader in that locker room. I think Miami, to some degree, kind of undervalued what Jarvis Landry brought to that team. And I think he's better in Cleveland anyway, even though his statistics might not have been better. But in Cleveland, they're asking him to do so much more. You know, there are so many times he took like this inside receiver reverse. We used to call it Sally in high school. That's what my head coach used to call it, Sally. What it is it's an inside reverse to one of the wide receivers. And Jarvis Landry took that handoff. They even had him throw the ball. He threw a deep ball perfectly. So the reason why his stats aren't as good is because Baker Mayfield likes to use, you know, Rashad Perriman, Higgins, Callaway, Antonio Callaway, and some of the other guys they have there. He likes to distribute the ball to everybody, which keeps the offense unpredictable, because you never know who's going to get the ball. It takes advantage of all the weapons. But Jarvis Landry, he's just the way he fits into that team in Cleveland. I think he's actually more valuable in Cleveland than he was in Miami. And I know he had all those 100-yard catches there. Or not 100-yard catches, 100 catches per season in Miami, and was just catching everything. But it just was just all on him in Miami, and the Dolphins weren't getting a lot out of it, you know. Even though they were, the team wasn't really optimizing it well. They weren't getting other people involved, and it just kind of left an unbalance where in Cleveland – Jarvis Landry's putting up these big numbers, leading the team in receiving yards, but yet balance, and they're giving other guys the ball too, and he's playing just, I don't know, I just like his role in Cleveland a lot more than I did in Miami. The next topic we're going to cover is the Alliance of American Football. You know, some might say that Tom Dundon's $250 million investment is a huge win for the Alliance of American Football. Charlie Ebersole and Bill Polian's hard work earned the AAF the funding they need. So with news breaking yesterday that the Alliance of American Football had to receive a $250 million investment from Tom Dundon to stay afloat, we have to ask ourselves if this was really a loss for Charlie Ebersole and Bill Polian. You know, those two did such a good job of organizing this new league that it compelled an investor to take a huge risk on them. Had Ebersole and Polian put together a bad product, everyone would have avoided this league like the plague. And to some degree, this is a huge win for the AAF. If anyone else had a startup, they got a $250 million investment, they would be jumping with joy and going out to celebrate with a night on the town. Don't get me wrong, there's massive challenges in the future for the people in charge of this whole operation. Payroll is the largest expense, and it'll cost $36 million alone to cover the tab for 515 players making $70K apiece. You know, that number will increase substantially when some of those players get to the second or third year of their contract, which pays $80,000 and then $100,000. You know, Vince McMahon once admitted that the XFL lost $100 million in a single season. So if you go off that number, then the AAF might be able to make it 2.5 years with this investment. That at least gives them a window to generate some revenue and bring some other investors into the fold. Eventually, things should catch on, especially if people continue to tune into the games. Will it be enough to save this league? Who knows, but they could have been out of business already and been an enormous flop. Instead, their vision lives on, and it looks like it will be around at least for the foreseeable future. Now someone needs to get Vince McMahon on the phone and merge the AAF and the new XFL, and we'll really see if things can work. So the AAF, some are saying, you know, they needed a bailout after only 2 weeks of football, that they blew through all their funds. And, you know, as a new league, you have a lot of upfront costs. You know, like I said, you got to pay players, pay coaches, buy jerseys, buy equipment, buy insurance, pay for your stadium rentals, host all the facilities that you're doing, all your tryouts and everything like that. And there's just so much on the table. And as someone who ran a semi-pro football team for 6 years, I was doing that locally in Detroit. And, you know, the refs, the stadium, all the other expenses would mount up so quickly. And that wasn't having to pay players. In semi-pro, the players actually paid to play in Michigan, where we have semi-pro football. So the bills were mounting up, and I didn't have to pay my players. And not only that, the travel was a state over at the most. So the Lions of American Football, they had to pay these players $36 million a year. Not only that, they have to travel across the country, whether it's planes, bus, whatever, probably planes. And, you know, taking 50 guys on a trip, you know, 60 guys with the staff and the employees, maybe even 70 guys, to get everybody from one location to another, you can begin to see why they burn through all their funds so quickly. But luckily, Tom Dundon, you know, the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes, he liked what he saw, and that's a credit to Charlie Ebersol and Bill Polian, because they were so organized as far as the logistics of everything. They were so organized. And then by hiring top-of-the-line coaches, the play on the field was crisp, and it resembled a watered-down NFL, but it wasn't like when we saw the XFL or the UFL or some of these other leagues where it just looked bad and there was fumbles and quarterbacks couldn't even get the exchange from the center and tosses were just thrown behind the running back. It actually looks like football that you can get behind to some degree. So Bill Polian and Charlie Ebersol did such a good job that this investor, the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes, Tom Dundon, decided to put $250 million into the league. Now, I don't know about you. If I had an app, if I had a website, if I had some business that was in my garage and I got $250 million, I'm probably at the bar that night, popping champagne, have a VIP booth, have girls all around me. I would probably blow a million dollars of that money that night, and we would ride with $249 million from there on out. That's just how much I would be living it up if my vision got $250 million. So all these news outlets want to say, yeah, they had to get bailed out, and that's probably true. Because if this was all happening, why did it not come out sooner that Dundon was doing the investment? And why did the glitch happen in week one where the players didn't get their paychecks? All signs point to the fact that this was indeed a bailout. But at the same time, a real loss would have been having to fold up and be an embarrassment after just 2 weeks. But because ratings were so good, because they have a great technological aspect to the new league with the app and things like that, and because they're so organized, they do get this money, and that means they'll probably be around for 2 or 3 years. So that buys them the window, and the AAF did a great job. I'm John Kuzma. Thanks for tuning in. Check out endzoneblog.com. Go on endzoneblog.com and sign up for Hulu. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. I'm signing off. Have a great day.